Hello, and welcome to Joy of Cubing. I am your host, Cranny, and with me, as always, is Jack Grannon. Jack?
Good morning, Cranny.
Good morning. How's your weekend treating you?
Pretty good. It is a good morning indeed, because, as you might know, it is PAX East weekend, and it's a big thing, and it's nice when it's in your backyard, which it essentially is, so I'm just gonna walk around, hang out with some friends, check out some games, including Magic the Gathering.
Well, yeah, I wonder, do they typically do any spoilers or any previews or anything at PAX?
Really. No. They got a booth. They fired drafts off. I think they did spoilers last year, but nothing really this year. It's they don't put as much effort into it as the one in Seattle.
Sure,
yeah. Pretty obvious reasons, and they don't do the same for like San Diego Comic Con. Just there's just so many events that they can go to, and they still go to it, but that you know. They don't roll out the big guns for this place. So, yeah. You know, you can still go and you get to check out, you know, people cosplaying and some statues and all that jazz. But for the most part, it's just, you know, another magic station.
Yeah. I like to do Christmas shopping at conventions because they always have interesting shirts and games and such. So I get it all done early so I don't have to deal with that. Junk.
Yeah, that's actually the main thing I'm interested in, just checking out the swag and the different purchasables.
Nice. So it's been a few weeks since we've had the release of Shadows Over Innistrad, and we will do a more preview centric one where we haven't tested the cards, we have no context around them. But we typically like to prefer to have some experience with the cards. So we've either played them in the pre-release, we've done drafts on Magic Online, or even have them in our cubes. So that's why the release is a little bit later. I also had a death in the family, which is kind of a bummer, which caused an even further delay. So thanks to all of you for your patience in the release of this episode. Sorry to have delayed it as much as we have, but we are here, and we're here to talk about Shadows Over Innistrad. It's going to be a great show. I mean, this set's, like, great.
It's so deep.
It's super deep.
The deepest. It's super deep. I think we say that every single time.
Well, you know what? With this set, though, I think it really... I mean, the mechanics are kind of more evergreen than some of the mechanics that we've seen in past sets, so there's just so many more ways that you can play this cube, and... We've even combed our list or culled our list from a bunch of cards that are good enough for like tribal cubes, peasant, pauper, graveyard oriented cubes. I mean, there's something for everybody, even if you don't have like sort of that core, you know, cube staple category.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I've read about this recently, this set in general, is that it's just so much more complicated, and it's obviously very flavorful, but, you know, looking at this set compared to your traditional Magic set, even the commons have so many lines of text, which is not necessarily a good thing, but when you get into, you know, cubes that want specific things, you can find a lot of that in this set, because they just don't allocate a lot of slots to just, well, here's your vanilla creature, here's your vanilla mediocre removal spell they have.
Yeah.
You know, here's your graveyard-centric things. Obviously, you got Madness, you got Delirium, you've got all your tribal with humans, zombies, et cetera, et cetera. So there's something for everybody, and I really like this set just from a flavor standpoint, from a complexity standpoint. I'm a big fan of complex Magic, and I'm sure that doesn't fly by everybody. But you know, if you're in the cubing world, you're probably okay with it.
Yeah, I think with the when they got rid of core sets, I was kind of nervous that we would see a complexity, what's the opposite of creep, a complexity dumbed down or a reduction in complexity. But I think they've found that complexity adds to the limited environment in such a way that even newer players appreciate it. In this set, anytime you have a graveyard-based mechanic where you do things out of the graveyard, you add another zone where you can have resources that adds complexity. Delirium, you have to count the kinds of permanents that you have in graveyards, so that adds complexity. And then, of course, flip cards, and the way that you sequence your spells and that. So I think the limited environment itself, if you haven't played Shadows Over Innistrad Limited, is a very fun set. There's a lot of different directions that you can take it, and I'd say it's probably, in my opinion, not as good as the original Innistrad, but I think you get the same feeling, and I think, honestly, maybe even it's just apples and oranges. I think they're both good in their own rights.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, but you don't care about Shadows Over Innistrad Limited. Who cares about Shadows Over Innistrad Limited?
Not us.
No, definitely not. So we're going to talk about cube cards. We've got a lot. We probably got about, I don't know, something like 6 or 8 or 10 cards per color.
It's like 10 or more most of them.
It's pretty deep. So we're going to go through as we typically do. In most cases, we're going to read the entire text of the card, get into what we think about them. If it's super obvious, we may just remind you that this card exists and move on. If it's not, like our first card, well, our first card's super obvious, but it's a pretty interesting card. We may spend a little bit longer there. So without further ado, as we do in many sets, we're going to begin with an angel just because it's just always some angel. Because
they begin with A, and they love assonance. that's what it's about.
You're an assonance. Oh, man. Okay, so first card is Archangel Avacyn. So this is like the flagship card of the set. So I assume everybody listening has probably seen this card. But if you haven't, it's a 5-mana 4/4, white-white 3, with Flash Flying Vigilance. So already when you look at those abilities.
Already better than Sarah Angel.
Yeah, it's strictly...
Which is unheard of, because the card is the best.
Okay, so it's not strictly, but those stats, it's strictly better than Sir Angel, but then it has some additional text. When Archangel Avacyn enters the battlefield, creatures you control gain indestructible until end of turn. So pretty nice trigger. Stops wrath, stops all sorts of shenanigans from happening. And then it has this other ability. When a non-angel creature you control dies, transform Archangel Avacyn at the beginning of the next end step. All right, so this thing flips over, and she becomes a 6/5 flying creature that has the ability when this creature transforms into Avacyn the Purifier, it deals 3 damage to each other creature and each opponent. So this very kind of strange, slag-stormy, you know, bolt your opponent kind of effect on a creature gives your stuff indestructible. I mean, there's just like a million ways that you could play this card.
Yeah, not only is it incredibly powerful, it's very, you know, so flavorful. I'm going to stop saying that because it doesn't really matter. What matters is it's really complex and cool, and there's a lot of different lines you can take with this. There's a lot of different interesting interactions that happen. So, you know, flipping is not always a good thing because if you're playing a creature-heavy deck, which, you know, the front side of the card, the one that gives your team indestructibility, you know, that would kind of encourage you to play it with a bunch of other creatures. But if you flip it and it kills everything you got, then, well, that's not good. So there is kind of a cost with this flip. Obviously, the stats are great. 6/5 flying, you know, dealing 3 to your opponent's great. Also, something of note that it does flip into a red creature. So if your opponent's got like a sort of pro white and something, something, then, you know, you kind of have an answer.
Yeah. I mean, I
think
that, yeah, that is honestly more like flavor text than anything. The fact that
I live for the corner
that
case,
she becomes, she becomes red. But yeah, there's just there's just 100 ways that this card can play out. I've faced it many times already in cube, and it's proven to be quite good. So I don't think that there's anybody out there saying that a 5-mana 4/4 with approximately 4 abilities and upside to even the drawback ability of dealing 3 to all your stuff would argue that this card is not cubable. So if you're looking for cuts, I think there's still a number of 5 drops that people play. I probably would keep your Cloud Goat Rangers and your Bane Slayers safe and maybe phase out some of the other 5-mana token makers. I still would also not phase out something even like Karmic Guy because I still really like the card. And in a graveyard-oriented set, you may be juicing up the graveyard, which we'll talk about a little bit more when we get to our first Madness card.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, okay. All right. Let's move on to our next white card. What do we got?
So next one, we got Always Watching, another card that's seen a lot of play already in Standard.
Yeah.
One white-white. It's an enchantment, so non-token creatures you control get +1/+1 and have Vigilance. So basically Glorious Anthem that tacks on Vigilance but doesn't affect your tokens. So
yeah.
Kind of an interesting card. That's definitely a cost with, you know, all of your, what is it? Your Spectral Procession. Oh, I thought I was going to forget that. That would have been
brutal. No, you did it.
I did it. I did it, Maddie. But Vigilance, and an ever-increasing amount, Creature Combat is becoming, like, the most relevant it's ever been. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess it's been for years, but I remember back in the day, Vigilance was kind of like flavor text, and now, you know, Vigilance is very real, and it's very useful.
Yeah.
And when it affects your entire team, then it makes combat a whole lot easier. So this card, just very straightforward, very powerful. It has a very minor cost with it, but in general, that's got to be better than Glorious Anthem 9 times out of 10, right?
You know, I think it probably is in many cases. So if you think of the Anthem effects that we have, Honor the Pure, Crusade, the Glorious Anthem, and then, like, when it's on a stick, you have some creatures that provide it. You know, white does not have a lack of options in this category. So I think this one's just more important to point out that, you know, it's good for redundancy's sake. So maybe if, like, Honor the Pure is just a little bit too narrow, like you just find it's not good in white-red or white-green or whatever, that this might be better. Certainly if you're not pushing tokens, this is a better card than Glorious Anthem. So I just think it's worth noting that now we have another option, just the same way as anytime we get an Oblivion Ring or a burn effect or whatever. I think, you know, we should probably expect to see an Anthem every 1 to 2 blocks. So,
yeah.
And we'll continue to talk about it. So
it's pretty staple.
All right, let's talk about another card. I really like this card at common. It's a very powerful common. The card's called Angelic Purge. It's 2 and a white, and it's a sorcery, and it has the text, as an additional cost to cast Angelic Purge, sacrifice permanent, and you may exile target artifact, creature, or enchantment. So a permanent Oblivion Ring, or if you want to call it maybe a more expensive Iona's Judgment.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Which I think just can't hit enchantment, which I think is an important distinction. So,
no, it can't hit enchantment. It can't hit
artifacts.
No, Angelic Purge can hit artifact, creature, or enchantment.
No, I'm talking about Iona's Judgment.
Oh, sure. Yep. Okay, that's artifact, yeah.
So I really like this card. I certainly like this in Common Uncommon Cube where, you know, I think that this is just a very solid removal spell, but I really like it also, I think, in regular cube. Just, I think it's a...
Really?
I think it's a solid spell. You know, if you're really going for power level, is this going to beat out some of the other options? Maybe not. I think if you have, you know, a reason to want to sacrifice permanence, I like it. I guess I should say that I don't think this is like an auto include, but I certainly think this is one that people should consider as a very decent option. I think there are a couple other options for removal spells in this set that we'll talk about that would automatically make me bump this card out of contention, but, you know, we don't want to leave anything off the table.
Yeah, I think at common it's good for Pauper. It's a little bit too expensive, too much of a cost for what I want to be doing with it, unless, like you said, you want to be sacrificing something. But that transitions nicely into the next card, which really helps you out in that category, and that's Bound by Moonsilver. Again, we're not talking like a strictly powerful card, but Bound by Moonsilver is 2 and a white, enchant creature, aura. Enchant creature can't attack, block, or transform. So it's like a passivism for 3 with the added bonus of it can't transform, and it has sacrifice another permanent, attach Bound by Moonsilver to target creature. Activate this ability only any time you can cast a sorcery and only once each turn.
Yep.
So it's like a movable passivism. Gives you a sacrifice outlet if you want it. White doesn't typically have a big need for that, but, you know, you could... Well, I guess white-black aristocrats is a thing, and so that's...
Or if you just have, like, a Shackles or a you know, Sower of Temptation or something. I always like it with those abilities.
Well, this one you can only activate as a sorcery is the problem with that.
No, I mean, that's fine. I think that this card, you know, cards like Arrest and Fate's Fetters and, you know, those effects are definitely respectable effects to have. I really like this. You know, Prison Term is a card that's really close for me, but it just, like, is not powerful enough. And I think that this card is definitely powerful enough. I think that people will be surprised. I mean, and this is one that I mentioned just like after having seen it in limited play. It's just a very solid card all around. And I think, like, especially in the late game when you can just bounce this over, you play it early and stop their best attacker. And then, you know, you can bounce it over whenever you need to. You can do silly things with, you know, sacrificing permanents. I think it's pretty good. Obviously, not stopping activated abilities definitely hurts it.
Yeah, the transform part is basically flavor text. I mean, you might have Huntsmaster and, well, I guess it's, you know, after this
there's set, a few cards, but
you're adding quite a few of them. Yeah. Not enough to make it that relevant, but still could be.
Yeah, I guess I would just say I have seen Arrest pop up in a few lists, and so the reason that I want to talk about this card was just because I think I'd rather have this over Arrest most times. So, all right, so let's go into our next card, Bygone Bishop. This card is a 3-mana 2/3 flyer, so decent stats, but then it has the ability, whenever you cast a creature spell with a converted mana cost of 3 or less, Investigate. So, for those of you who don't know what Investigate is, it's an ability that allows you to put a colorless clue artifact token onto the battlefield that has the ability to sacrifice this artifact, draw a card. So you get like these, you can amass these clues, and then when you have a available mana, sacrifice them and draw a card. So it's a pretty nice mana sink for when you need them. This is the one of three clue cards that I think are potentially good enough for Cube. I would say it's probably the second best one. And even that is probably not saying a lot just because I'm not 100% sold that I think this card is good enough. The reason I like this maybe over something like... Oh, no.
Mentor of the Meek?
Yes, thank you. Good job. Oof. Nice assist. It's just that you don't have to sink the mana in, and its stats are much better. So if Mentor of the Meek is a decent card in your cube, you have a one more mana investment to get the card draw off of it. But if you're playing a lot, if you chain a lot of creature spells together, you can get clues, and it's on cast. So you, no matter what, are going to get the clue token, which is also another nice component of this card. So
which can be better or worse sometimes. I mean, sometimes you've got, you know, like an Elspeth that ticks up that you put a 1/1 into play, you get to draw a card or three cards off Mentor if you're talking 6-mana Elspeth.
Mm-hmm.
But in situations like that, you know, if you've got that much mana lying around, if you've got a 6-mana Elspeth, if you've got an Elspeth that, you know, any Elspeth that's just ticking up kind of nonchalantly, you're probably doing all right. And that seems like more of a win more when you have to act, when you have the extra mana to invest in it. So I like Mentor of the Meek, but if we're going tit for tat with Bygone Bishop, like this one, obviously, you get the clue immediately, but you have to spend two later on. So it's, you know, either you pay one immediately with Mentor, or you can pay two with this anytime you want.
Yeah.
And this one, this one's much better for curving out. You don't have to make that decision of, well, do I sandbag this card for an extra turn so I can get the value out of it or what? Yeah. And then this, of course, is a 2/3 flyer versus a 2/2, so that's no brainer. So I think I like this card a little bit more, especially if we're talking, you know, the strictly aggressive decks that you just want to deploy your hand and, you know, refuel if you need to.
Yeah, yeah.
So, the way Humans decks in Standard, like, they've already showcased that, you know, they'll play Clue Token Makers. We'll talk about one a little bit later, Thraben Inspector. And, you know, it's the sort of thing that it's nice to have. Like, if you are playing these cards out, and, like, if you kill your opponent on turn 4 or 5, you don't need to crack them, then that's great. And if they bounce back a little bit and you need a little extra gas, then that's when you start popping the clues. So
yep.
It's nice that they have a mechanic, and I think it's really, really well designed in the way that it's good, but it's not too good. Because mm-hmm. we've seen a lot of cards like this that see play in Standard and Cube, and it's definitely my favorite mechanic.
Yeah, and I think it's worth noting that the clues are artifacts, and mm-hmm. I think that does come into play, certainly as we talk about Thraben Inspector. That,
have you ever animated a clue token with Tezzeret?
No, but that sounds cool. I would like to like add to the affinity count and, you know, among other things, Metalcraft and such. So
mm-hmm.
Now it seems like so far that we've been talking about these spoiled cards that really these are like kind of not that good. They're just sort of like, yeah, okay, I could see an argument for it. I'm not that excited, except for like, you know, Archangel Absinthe. But we promise we have good cards coming, and I think the next card is a great example of that. So what is the next card on our list, Jackie?
That would be the Dauntless Cathar.
What? No, it's not.
That's okay. That card's great, though. No, so next card, Declaration in Stone. One and a white for a sorcery. Exile target creature and all their creatures with its controller controls with the same name as that creature. That player investigates for each non-token creature exiled this way. So wow. That card's great, obviously. You know, I when I first saw it, I thought, eh, it seems good, but, you know, it's two mana removal, it's sorcery speed. They're always going to get value out of it. Like, this can't be that good. But I was wrong, which is very rare. I'll go on the record in saying that. and it's just so versatile. And especially when you're playing that deck that just wants to kill your opponent dead, if you pay two mana and you can just get rid of anything, that's a pretty good rate.
It's just, really, yeah. I mean,
you know, cheaper than Oblivion Ring. You don't have to worry about them getting rid of it and blowing you out.
Yeah, or even like Journey to Nowhere, which is like super aggressively costed for the ability you get. And the nice thing about this is if you kill a 3/3 beast token with this, they don't even get to investigate.
Oh, yeah.
So if you're like, if they spectral and you're just like, okay, kill your spectral tokens, they get nothing. Like, tell me what Journey to Nowhere Oblivion Ring does that. Don't say Detention Sphere. But no, this is like all the power of a Detention Sphere in a, like, you know, it has some drawback, but like, is the drawback worse than having your opponent just bounce Detention Sphere when it's on the battlefield? No. This card to me, I think, is better than Detention Sphere in that sense. Obviously you can't hit Planeswalkers and those kinds of things, but in the decks that want to get stuff out of the way, this card is just going to be better 9 times out of 10.
Yeah. It's cheaper, and it's just so much more aggressively costed. I mean, 2 is obviously less than 3. I'm going to go on the record and say that as well.
Well, I think this is now, like, you have Swords to Plowshare, you have Path. I think this is the third best removal spell in that category.
The third best white removal spell?
Oh, yeah. It's certainly better than Condemn. I think it's better than Journey. I don't think that it's better than Oblivion Ring, but I think that there's a lot of times it's going to be a better card, like a lot of times.
Yeah, actually, that's funny. I never thought about, you know, just strictly white removal spells. This probably is the third best one. I mean, the Oblivion Ring is, you know, that counts, but this might be better, and, you know, that might not even count during this qualification because it hits any permanent.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this card's obviously the jam. I don't think you'll get a disagreement here.
Slammity jam. All right, well, let's move on to the next one. Let's go to Thalia's Lieutenant. So we skip a whole bunch of cards. There's just a whole lot of filler and kind of fringe cards that maybe aren't going to make the cut in most cubes. So Thalia's Lieutenant, I'd say this one's borderline, but we've seen it in Standard, and it's got some pretty interesting use cases. So this is a 2-mana 1/1, one and a white for a 1/1. When Thalia's Lieutenant enters the battlefield, put a +1/+1 counter on each other human you control. And when another human enters the battlefield under your control, put a +1/+1 counter on Thalia's Lieutenant. So it's kind of got a mix of a few different kinds of abilities here. It's got like an anthem, and then it also is able to make itself larger, which is kind of cool. When you think of white-based aggro decks, nowadays, most of the creatures, I'd say a majority of the creatures are humans. So the, you know, ability to anthem off this is pretty good. Kind of a bummer that it's a 2-mana 1/1. If you have nothing else to do, it's just not that exciting. Whereas I think the one-drop version of this card without the first ability doesn't feel so bad. And I'm saying it like that because I don't remember the name of the card.
Champion of the Parish.
You know, a Champion of the Parish is like, okay, yeah, I don't have a human right now, but whatever, it's still 1-mana 1/1. I'll, you know, I'm going to commit to the board. This one, it's like, I don't think I want to play this if I'm not going to get value off that first ability. But I think it's a pretty nice card.
Yeah, no, that's definitely right. And I don't know if you play this outside of your tribal cubes. I mean, there's certainly enough humans in your typical cube if you're playing, especially if you're playing aggressive decks, that I think you can pull it off, and it's probably worth it. I mean, I think you gotta have, you know, at least two guys out there before you consider playing this, and you gotta have enough backup. So probably a pretty decent count of humans in your deck for you to want to have this, but you know, it acts as a pseudo anthem and it acts as a pseudo threat for future creatures. So it doesn't play well against Wraths. So that's, you know, one of the reasons I think it does better in standard than it probably will in cube.
Yeah, not a fair point.
You can kind of just like go ham with it, but you know, it's certainly a powerful card if you support the human tribal. Then, yeah, I mean, obviously, any cube that has Champion of the Parish in it should have this in it as well.
Yeah, and I like Champion of the Parish as a card, and this is a two drop. You know, you have to think of like all of the powerful two drops that we have that aren't even in cubes right now. I'm thinking of like the 8.5 Tails or Jotun Grunts and those kinds of cards that just like their presence on the board is just like much more impressive than this. But yeah, I think, you know, I have dreams of like cloning this and doing all sorts of stupid things like that, but you know, whatever. It's, I think it's worth noting that, you know, I think you could trigger this off of like human tokens. So like, obviously, you know, if you have Gather the Townsfolk type stuff, you know, it's better, but yeah. Okay. And kind of another fringe card, I'm just going to talk about this one briefly because I don't think that this is going to be powerful enough in most cubes, but Usman has been texting with me like as like spoilers have come out, and he's like obsessed with this guy. Thraben Inspector is a 1-mana 1/2, and like, you know, stop trying to make Thraben Inspector happen, it's not going to happen type thing. Yeah, he really wants it to happen, and so like...
I like this card.
I like it, but I just don't think... like. Oh my, you know, if this was a 2/1, holy smokes.
Oh, well, yeah, okay, that was...
I'm just saying, like, so this supports, I think if you're supporting Affinity or Metalcraft, I love this card. Like, I think this is a really nice addition to that. If you're just like, yeah, I want a 1/2 that can cantrip later, I don't think this is a good card at all.
Oh,
so,
sure.
So I just want to call it out for, like, for just archetype support, like, if you're like, yeah, I'm a kind of person that wants to run, you know, all of the Metalcraft cards. Like, I want Moxhold to be good. I want, you know, Galvanic Blast to be good. Then, yeah, you need to run Thraben Inspector. That's all.
I think it's a little bit deeper than that. I mean, I think it's a good card if you're playing like blue white blink. If you're playing your Muldrifters, your Revelarchs, your Brago. You know, this guy, he's a good, you know, how many one drops do those decks really have that are kind of meaningful? This one blocks decently well when it first comes out, and you get a clue token so you can cash it in whenever you get a chance. I think it's got a real spot.
That's fair. Fair assessment. Probably not making the cut in most cubes, though.
Yeah, that's fine.
All right, what's next on the list?
So, last white card, we have Toppelgeist. Mm. So another one, wait, one drop, 1/1 flyer. When Toppelgeist enters the battlefield, tap target creature and opponent controls. This has Delirium, so Delirium just checks whenever, you know, if your graveyard has four or more types of different cards in it, so kind of like a pseudo Tarmogoyf mechanic. So at the beginning of each opponent's upkeep, if you have Delirium, tap target creature that player controls. Mm. So it taps a creature when it comes into play, and it taps something during your opponent's upkeep, if you have Delirium, and it's a 1/1 flyer. So it's kind of, I don't know. I've yet to see how well the white decks can enable a Delirium. I think it's a little bit more difficult than your typical decks, but...
I have first-hand experience with this card in cube.
You died to it, and that's why you want to talk about it.
No. So... a couple different scenarios. It was in a just like typical 6 or 8 man draft where we just played it out, and it was in the white weenie deck. And I love the play of being able to tap down your opponent's blocker and sneak stuff in. And then in the late game, it just becomes a marshalling, oh man, I'm 3 for 3. I'm just going to have to go throw myself out a window. You know, it's able to stop your opponent's best attacker in combat for, you know, for the low cost of 1 mana that you invested, you know, way earlier in the game. But where it was really fun was anytime we have an 8-man, exactly an 8-man, we do a 2-headed giant draft. Mm. And this card is really good, 2-headed giant, because it can tap both of your opponent's both each of your opponents, yeah, you get to tap one of their, you know, attackers, and so that was really good.
Okay, I buy that.
Yeah, so I like it in that, you know, White's one drops are kind of just not exciting to me anymore. I feel like, you know, the most exciting cards that we have seen, you know, aren't the two mana or the one mana 2/1s, which are just like so boring to me at this point. So I think this card at least, you know, is interesting, and it's also just not a bad top deck in the late game. Like, in the beginning of the game, you're like, yeah, fine, 1 mana 1/1, I can pump it up, I can sort it up. But like in the late game, you top deck this and you just need to sneak damage in, kill Planeswalker, whatever. I love this card. So
it's a really good card for holding equipment, especially like Jit or swords that need to connect, because, you know, A, it's a flyer, and B, you can tap down whatever, you know, if they have a flyer. So they have to have basically two things that can block this before you can, you know, potentially stop it from getting through. So, yeah, you know, that is not a, you know, it's not an insignificant aspect of the card.
Yeah.
So I'm slightly more on board. You got me.
All right, so let's move into blue.
Okay.
I think now is a good time. We got our first Madness card as the first card, and it's not my favorite Madness card in the set, but it's pretty good. The card's called Broken Concentration. 1 blue-blue instant counter-target spell. So we've seen about 100 of those, but it has the ability Madness, 3 and a blue. So Madness, the way that works is if you discard this card, discard it into exile, and when you do, cast it for its Madness cost or put it in your graveyard. So if I have a Merfolk Looter in play, and my opponent plays a spell, I can activate the Merfolk Looter, draw a card, discard this, and I've essentially gained one card. I've gained the card that I drew off Merfolk Looter because I didn't have to play this card for its actual cost. So you get some opportunities to get card advantage. It's also nice, too, if you just have a card that has a discard effect, like Air of Falconwrath or something. When this set came out and Madness became a thing, and there are other Madness cards that we'll talk about, I maxed out on my looters. So, you know, I have pretty much, you know, Thought Courier, Merfolk Looter, Desolate Lighthouse, Enclave Cryptologist, you know, all of the kinds of cards that draw card, discard, or even have discard type effects. I didn't go as far to include Aquamoeba or anything.
Do you have Tibble?
No Tibble either. Yeah, no. He's a little...
That's a shame.
Yeah, he's a little erratic or unpredictable. But so like Circular Logic has been in for at least 3 or 4 weeks, and I've been really impressed having those cards in. And so having Circular Logic in alongside Broken Concentration just seems like a natural fit. So if you're really pushing the mechanics of the set, which I typically like to do when a new set comes out, like really try to figure out how we can bring the set to light, you would want to include this over something like, you know, some of the other 3-mana counter spells we've seen. We have one that has Awaken, we have one that has Scries, you know, Dissipate type effects. And I definitely think this is a more interesting card than Dissipate.
So. Yeah, we've seen so many 3-mana counter spells that do roughly the same thing. I mean, Dissolve is the best of them, I think, because, you know, Scrying one is better than Exiling card. And so we had Dissipate, we've had the colorless version of Dissipate. We've got just straight up Cancel. Nothing that's really stands out. I mean, this thing, you know, at worst, it is a Cancel. And then, you know, with the upside of, you know, like you said, if you have a Looter and you get to get them, then it's, you know, that's sweet. That's card advantage. So
yep.
I'm into it.
Cool. All right. So what's next on the list?
So next thing, we got Epiphany at the Drowneyard. This is X and blue for an instant. Reveal the top X plus one cards of your library and separate them into two piles. An opponent chooses one of those piles, puts that in your hand, and the other into your graveyard. So it's basically like a Steam Augury for X. So Steam Augury basically being the reverse Factor Fiction. So
yep.
For those of you who don't know, you know, Factor Fiction, you separate the piles, and your opponent gives you, or your opponent separates the piles, yeah, you pick which one to get. Now, yeah, the reverse is much worse. So you separate the cards into piles. So it's X plus one, so that's nice. So like if you pay 4 mana, you get to separate, you get 4 cards, you put them in the piles, your opponent gives you which pile to keep in your hand, the other in your yard.
Yep.
So it's a scalable Steam Augury. Steam Augury, never really that impressive. You know, obviously, if we're talking about a really graveyard-centric cube, this thing gets a lot more impressive. But I think when you're talking about, specific draw card effects, especially in blue decks, you really want to find specific answers. And so when you give your opponent the option to put whatever, like, so if you're digging for like an Elspeth or something or a Wrath, and then you put Wrath in one pile because you absolutely need that Wrath, then your opponent will just not give you the Wrath.
Yeah.
And you'll lose. So, I think this suffers the same problem as Steam Augury. I don't think it was because it was two colors that it was unplayable. I think it was just the nature of the choice.
It's a punisher mechanic in a lot of ways. You know, giving your opponent the ability to choose is rough. Where I like this card, I think that X equals 3 is like the minimum that I would play this card, where it's just like, I'm probably going to get two cards off of it. Maybe I'll get the best card, or maybe I'll get three cards. But I think where this card really shines is when you have the potential to put four or five cards into your hand. I really like it. It's way easier to cast than something like Sphinx's Revelation, and its instant speed makes it more interesting than something like Brain Geyser to me. I just think it's a very nice, and the graveyard interactions as well, right? So if you play a lot of flashback cards, if you have a lot of reasons to get a card in the yard, then this is a great card. So I'd say that this one is going to be cube list dependent, but it certainly scales better than a lot of the other draw spells.
Sure.
So, okay, cool. Well, let's go on to the next one. The next card is Jace, Unraveler of Secrets. So Jace, Unraveler of Secrets is 3 blue-blue, a 5 loyalty planeswalker. So our first planeswalker we get to talk about. Luckily for you, there's not a lot to talk about with this card.
What do you mean luckily for them? Like they don't want to hear us talk?
No, because like usually planeswalker discussions are like,
They take forever.
And I just want to talk about all the cards, and planeswalkers get all of the attention, and this one doesn't get all the attention. So his abilities are pretty vanilla here. All right, it's +1, scry 1, then draw a card, so that puts him up to 6 loyalty, pretty nice. -2, return target creature to owner's hand. That seems a lot like another Jace we know. And then -8, you get an emblem with whenever an opponent casts his or her first spell each turn, counter that spell. So it has the Arayo emblem attached to it, or the Null Gargoyle, I guess. Although this gets any spell, not just non-creature spell.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, like, what is there to say? It's a 5-mana Honden. It's a much more fair card than Jace Memory Depth, which is good. So, we don't like that card, but we like this card. It protects itself, and it has an emblem that, can be pretty good. I don't think that it's game ending like a lot of the other emblems.
It doesn't help you win the game. If you've been drawing like a bunch of cards to get your emblem, then you might build for it. So you have to have something else. Like I like how one of Planeswalker can just win you the game, and this one it helps you. It puts you in the driver's seat, but it's not quite the same.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, like, a lot of Planeswalkers, the protection ability can only fire off once before you either have to sacrifice the Planeswalker altogether or tick it up. So when you think of the ones that pop in my mind, Karn, a Johnny Vengeance, Obnixilis, right? So they have protection abilities that, you tick, you kill a creature, you tick, you deal 3 damage. Ralzeric's the same way, right? You can do it twice, but you lose the Planeswalker. This is nice that you can actually tick it twice before you have to start ticking it back up. So you can be like, remove your guy, and then you can – commit more to the board while your opponent is kind of losing tempo. So in that sense, it's an extremely good planeswalker.
Yeah, well, it's a lot like you said, another Jace that can also do that exact same thing, cost 1 less mana.
Yeah, we can't really compare any planeswalkers to Jace the Mind Sculptor, though.
He's not Jace the Mind Sculptor, then he sucks.
Well, no, I mean, that's like saying like every draw spell we're going to compare to Ancestral Recall. Or like every tutor, we're just going to compare to Demonic Tutor.
That's my rubric, and I'm sticking to it.
All right. What's next? This is an easy end.
Yeah. No, he's good, but he's boring. We don't need to talk about how drawing cards or returning things to your hand is good. So let's go with something that's a little bit not as simple. So we have Pour Over the Pages. So this is 3 blue-blue for a sorcery. draw three cards, untap up to two lands, then discard a card. So it's Sift that costs one more mana that you get to untap two lands in between the draw and discard, which, given the set, lends itself to madness spells, which is cool. So it's a virtual three mana to do this spell, but you know, you have to have something to do with that mana, which, again, that's where the madness comes in, or if you have something cheap. So
yeah, if this card had madness on it, I would say this can make most cubes, just because, you know, you don't have to invest a lot. You can still dig for counterspells and things, and so in that sense, it's a power level pretty low. But the reason I point this card out is there's still a lot of cubes that run all 10 bounce lands. You know, you are promoting a Heartbeat or a Mana Flare deck, and this is definitely a card that I would want to have available, right? So I minus myself one mana, and I can dig three cards deep. And if I happen to have an additional High Tide or an additional, or if I have High Tide, then I'm really, really good, right? So.
Oh, yeah. Is this going to the combo cube?
It's really close for me. I think, like, you have to have two flares to generate mana, whereas, like, Frantic Surge always generates mana. So I think it's close. But if you have all 10 bounce lands, I would play this card 100%.
Yeah. Seems reasonable. All right. So what do we got next?
All right. We have, and this one's not super exciting, but as far as stats go, it's pretty nice. The card's called Rattle Chains. One and a blue for 2/1 flash and flying. And when Rattle Chains enters the battlefield, target spirit gains hexproof until end of turn. And you may cast spirit spells as though they have flash. So those are basically two lines of flavor text, but it's a 2/1 flash flying for 2 mana, which I'd say that's a lot better than Welcome Turn and Carnivorous Death Parrot and all the other options that we have at that casting cost. And it has, and the flavor text, like, could potentially be good at some point. Like, I guess you could flash in Geist of St. Traff. That would be pretty cool. But I don't really have much else to say other than this is great stats.
We saw 2/1 flash flying last set. That Eldrazi guy, I'm not going to even pretend that I'm going to remember the name. The one that you can exile opponents.
Let's take a guess. It's Eldrazi Subjugator.
No, I think it's Infiltrator.
Infiltrator.
It's some kind of infiltrating Eldrazi. But it might not be the Infiltrator.
Yeah.
It's doing some infiltrating, though. I can speak to that. So anyways, I wouldn't be surprised if we see a lot more cards like this where it's 2/1 flash flying for 2 in blue that has some, you know, mild flavored text, some kind of potential upside. So this is the beginning of an era of the 2/1 flash flyer. So get ready, everybody.
Prepare. So, all right, so this card skill is just like whatever. Either want that creature or you don't. So let's go to the next card.
Yeah. So now we're getting back into some of the flippity flip cards. We got Startled Awake. This is an interesting one. So this is a sorcery. It's 2 blue. Target opponent puts the top 13 cards of his or her library into his or her graveyard. So it's a archive trap just on the front side. When it's in your graveyard, you can pay 3 blue, put Startled Awake from your graveyard onto the battlefield transformed. Activate this ability only anytime you could cast a sorcery. So flip side is, well, it's a 1/1 creature, it's a persistent nightmare, has Skulk, which is a keyword that they just branded it. This creature can't be blocked by creatures with greater power. And when persistent nightmare deals combat damage to a player, return it to its owner's hand. So you get to, you know, mill your opponent, and then when it's in your graveyard, or, you know, you don't have to cast it. You could flip it over with, let's say, an Epiphany of the Drownyard. And now you have this option to bring back a little 1/1 creature that can return your hand and rinse and repeat. Nice thing about this is, you know, obviously it's a little bit tough connecting with a 1/1 creature, but, you know, if you got something like Crystal Shard or, you know, Man of War, you can kind of pretty easily, I would think. I mean, it takes
Skulk
time
on it. Like, Skulk is what makes it connect most of the time.
Skulk is good, yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, so in your experience, have you run this card yet?
No, I just think, like, you know, mill is something that is kind of a misunderstood strategy. And in fact, we should cover mill as a strategy, or how you support mill properly. But like the reason that this card is noteworthy is it does, it can win the whole game by itself. If you just have like counter spells and ways to find this card, you could just control the, you know, you play this card and if you're able to like protect the 1/1 that it flips into, cast it again, that should win you the game. Now, do I like that as a strategy? Not my favorite. I don't like Jace Memory Debt because it's way too easy to do it. I think you have to work a little bit harder for this. But, you know, it's really going to depend on if you, like, support that archetype and if you have the safety valve that would allow other decks not to die to it, right? You've got Eldrazi, you've got Gaia's Blessing, whatever kinds of cards. Or it's just like, hey, I don't want to mill my opponent for 13 because he has Unburial Rites and a bunch of Animate Dead type stuff. Yeah, I just think it's a powerful card. It's a powerful blue mythic. We would be remiss if we didn't talk about it. I don't think this makes a cut in 90% of cubes unless you're really looking to support mill, in which case I think this is a great card.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you.
All right, so we've been startled awake, and now we're going to go to probably the much superior blue flip card. This card is called Thing in the Ice. Unless you've been living in the ice, you probably... I've already seen this card.
I do.
So this card is... You do. Yeah, you live up in Boston. So it's one in a blue for an 0/4 defender. Thing in the Ice enters the battlefield with 4 ice counters on it. When you cast an instant or sorcery spell, remove an ice counter for Thing in the Ice. Then if it has no ice counters on it, transform. So we're talking Wall of Omen stats here. When we flip, we get a... when this creature transforms into Awoken Horror, return all non-horror creatures to their owner's hands. So that's a pretty big effect right there. And it's a 7/8.
Yeah.
Like,
not small.
And if you've seen this card in action, it's stupid good. Mm-hmm. It's stupid good. So in the early game, you could just, like, you know, get in with a Preordain, and this is just, like, blocking. But, like, all the while, your opponent's just like, how do I kill this? 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 And then if you just happen to have a way to flip this thing at instant speed, like you're just sitting on like Mana Leak Lightning Bolt or something, you just feel like you just can't possibly lose a game.
Probably true.
In a way that I think, you know, people compare this card a lot to like Tarmogoyf, and I don't even think, like, it's definitely apples and oranges. This is a totally different kind of card. Like Tarmogoyf doesn't usually come down and just play defensive, and it's like, oh, I have, now it's a 7/8, I'm going to attack in. Like, Tarmogoyf is usually built with the intent of getting into the red, and I think this is more, way more of a control card.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the idea is the same, where you play a 2-mana creature that starts out small, and it gets big, usually via playing spells, because Tarmogoyf wants you to have different types of cards in your yard, and then that helps when you have stuff like, you know, Lightning Bolt, Chain Lightning, you know, different types more than just creatures. So,
yeah,
you know, it'll grow. This thing just happens to go from 0 to 60 in, you know, 1 second when you finally remove that last counter. Not to mention, like, you get this amazing effect of bouncing every other creature. So,
which is, like, crazy to me. This is
so, do you think this is better than Tarmogoyf in cube?
No, I mean, in a lot of situations, yeah.
I mean, I know you just said this is apples and oranges. I mean, I think they're more similar than they're different just because the way they operate, but
I will say if you're just going like on a power scale, like 0 to 10, yeah, I think this card does more than Tarmogoyf does. Do I think, like, you know, like Tarmogoyf is highly expandable. I can run it in, like, if I'm just running, you know, red, blue, green, just like aggro or something, Tarmogoyf is going to be incredible there. Whereas, like, I might not even be able to trigger this card, right? Thing in the Ice is really going to be good in a deck that has like 5 to 8 instant spells at a minimum. If you just run at like a couple, it's never going to trigger. Then this card is worthless. It's like way worse than Wall of Omens. So yeah. I think this is going to be best in red blue or blue black.
So, like, yeah, it needs like a blue-red Delver-style deck, yes. A real tempo thing. And, you know, having a blocker or having a zero-power creature might not be where you want to be at, but it's, like, the upside is so good that
yeah.
It's got to be worth it, right?
Yeah, I think so. All right, so let's go. We got two more blue cards to talk about here. Not the best blue cards, but still worth mentioning here. So yes, we have our second clue card. Again, I'm not 100% sold that I think this card is gonna make a ton of waves, but cards Trail of Evidence, two and a blue enchantment. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, investigate. So the thought that I had with this when it was first spoiled was like, man, I would really love to have this in that red-blue deck or the very heavy counterspell deck where, like, all I want to do is just tie my mana up, casting counterspells and draw spells. And so, like, this just turns every card that I have into, like, kicker to draw card, which seems good. But, like, the initial investment of three mana might kill it for me. So what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's the sort of card that on paper... which is kind of funny because this guy is just walking across paper in the art.
That's pretty cool art, yeah.
Maybe that was the artistic direction they gave them. Make this card look good on paper. but yeah, so on paper, it sounds great to me. And it's not even kicker, pay two, draw a card. It's, you know, pay kicker, pay two anytime you want, not when you cast a spell.
Right, right.
So if you played like a, let's say Grixis, just like, you know, all spells deck where you have your lightning bolts and terminates and counter spells. Like, once you get this thing online, if you can get to board parity, then that's great. The problem is most things, you know, that you want to deal with, like if you're holding up counter magic, you don't want to be tapping out on turn three for something that doesn't do anything because, yep, you know, that's when the planeswalkers come down. That's when the hero of Bladeholds come down. And unless you have that specific answer to whatever card it is, then, you know, you're going to feel like kind of an idiot for playing this.
Yeah.
In general, I would definitely like to try it out, though. I think it sounds good, but...
It's got a lot of situations where it would be really good, but it might fall short.
Yeah.
All right, what's next?
Last one for blue, we get Welcome to the Fold. This is 2BB, another Madness card, so Madness X blue. Card is sorcery, gain control of target creature if its toughness is 2 or less. If Welcome to the Fold's mana cost is paid, instead gain control of that creature if its toughness is X or less. So, just to be clear, if you hard cast it, it's 4 mana, and it always gains control of a creature with toughness 2 or less. If you can madness this out, then you can pay X for 2, and then it's the same thing, or you can pay more or less, depending on what kind of creature you want to get. So,
and if you madness it, it can be at instant speed.
Yes, yeah, so... which it kind of has to be because, you know, if you have a looter, then you have to wait for the effect to end before it's done. So, so it gives you a lot of play, definitely rewards you for playing the madness cost. So the first spell that we looked at in blue, the counterspell Broken Concentration, that's actually cheaper on the front side, the normal cast. But this thing, definitely more scalable, definitely rewards you for playing the madness cost on top of the reward you get just from not having to discard a card.
Yeah, so. This is not control magic, right? So I wouldn't say control magic or even Sword of Temptation. The fact that it gets toughness as opposed to casting cost, to me, makes this a lot better than Threads of Disloyalty. So we're not only looking to just take, I'm going to take your Savannah line, so I want to take your... you know, the cheap threat that you played early on so that I have a block or something. So you can still do that with this card, but it not as good. Also, it doesn't have a subtype, and you just get the card, so you can't, like, disenchant this. Where I think that this really shines, obviously, the more madness you have. If you can madness this card out, like, off of a looter or something at instant speed, you have a very good trick on your hands. Because, you know, the only other kind of spells that we have it that is like Dominate, and even then I think like this would end up being cheaper than Dominate in most cases, unless you're trying to take, like, you know, a Woodfall Primus or something, in which case actually this is still cheaper than Dominate. So I think this is a very interesting card that requires some setup, but if you do have madness cards or madness enablers, I think the payoff is definitely there.
Yeah, it's definitely... The fact that it's permanent is pretty nice. Okay, so that concludes blue. We're going to get into black, and maybe my favorite card in the set.
Ooh, yeah.
We got Asylum Visitor. This is one and a black for a vampire wizard. It's a 3-1, so 3, then mind. At the beginning of each player's upkeep, if that player has no cards in hand, you draw a card and you lose one life. Madness, one in a black. Mm. So,
it's got a lot going for it, man.
It's got a lot going for it. We've had a lot of trap cards like this, like Bloodscrivener, the guy that has to untap to draw a card and lose life for two mana. You know, just a lot of two mana, Dark Confidant wannabe type of guys. And none of them really pan out super well other than, you know, pretty much just Dark Confidant. This thing, I think they pushed it a little bit more. You know, three power, that's a big deal for me. The fact that it's any player's hand has zero cards is kind of nice. So, you know, Bloodscrivener, it only rewarded you if you had no cards in hand, and it was only a 2/1, and it didn't have madness.
Yep.
So, you know, is it better than Dark Confidant? No. But, you know, it's still pretty good. I mean,
even
if you're just playing this as a 3/1 for two mana,
and that's exactly where my head's at.
That's not bad at all. And, you know, with how much we've talked about black aggro and how, you know, it needed a little bit of love, but it was so close to getting there. I think, you know, we have enough tools out there that it's a real force to be reckoned with. Yeah. And this is a really good key for that.
Yeah. So the reason that, you know, she's such a solid card is that, you know, Bloodscrivener, there's just a lot of situations you just can't empty your hand. But there's plenty of situations where you have decks that have a lot of really unfun cards like Mind Twist or him or whatever that you can make your opponent lose all those cards. Now, are you probably going to win the game if your opponent gets to Hellbent and you have, you know, decent board presence? Probably. But hey, you know what? At least I can burn the candle at both ends. I can waste my resources and my opponent's resources, and hey, maybe someone will eventually not have cards in their hand and I'll be able to draw. So, yeah, good card all around. I don't think there's any arguments that this card is not good enough.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right, so let's get into, I think this is my favorite card in this set, for me, so we got the second one in a row, is Elusive Tormentor. This is just like, you know, from a flavor standpoint, obviously this card's awesome, but I think this is a really powerful card that people are just now starting to realize that, okay, this is very powerful. It's a 2/2 black, 4 mana, for a 4/4, so pretty decent stats. That has the ability, 1, discard a card and transform Elusive Tormentor. And on the flip side, it is hexproof, indestructible, and it becomes Insidious Mist. And it can't block and can't be blocked. And when it attacks and isn't blocked, you may pay 2 in a black if you do transform it. Basically, you know, the flavor behind it is it's like this vampire that anytime it's in trouble can turn itself into mist and then uses some of its power to turn itself back. This is just an awesome card.
I didn't know that vampires turned into mist. I thought it was always bats.
Haven't you played Castlevania Symphony of the Night?
Clearly no.
Yeah, well, it turns into green mist. So this is actually just out of the card.
That's why you like this card, because it's a throwback to some SNES game, obviously.
Well, no. This is a PlayStation game, and it's probably the best platformer that's ever been created, so let's just try to have some respect.
All right, fair enough.
So I think this card's a powerful card. It's in a slot that black is typically not super exciting, aside from like the Necrotals of the world. And it's flavorful, and you know, what more could you want? So.
Yeah, decent stats. Definitely a good enabler, especially since we're talking about adding all these madness cards, and you know you can obviously throw back to some old cards like Flashback, and overall decently powerful, decently fun.
Yeah, like you can also just not transform this back and just leave a sword equipped to it and just kill your opponent dead that way. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
All right,
this will do. This Insidious Mist holding a sword. Why not?
So what else we got?
So next one we've got is from Under the Floorboard. So this is a lot like the blue Mind Control or Control Magic that we talked about. So it's 3 black-black with Madness, X black-black, sorcery speed. Put 3 2/2 black zombie creature tokens on the battlefield tapped and you gain 3 life. Or if you play this with this Madness cost, instead put X into play and gain X life.
Yep.
So it's like a Spectral Procession for zombies that you gain life with, that you can also madness out, is, you know, it's, I'm not really sure where I'd want this. I'm not convinced I would, but it seems like a decent enough effect. I mean, it's 6 power for 5 mana at a minimum. with three life, and then, you know, it scales up if you got Madness Enabler, which we're just going to assume that, you know, if you're playing, you know, cards that, you know, enough cards with Madness that you're going to put ways to enable that in your cube.
Yeah.
It seems like a decent enough card. I don't know what else to say about it.
No, it's a solid card. I think the life gain is what really sells it for me. You know, getting, obviously committing to the board is really good, but getting that life gain, it has been surprisingly relevant in the times that we've played this card.
That's true. I mean, I always often forget that black doesn't, you know, they have ways of getting it back, but there's so few and far between and so many ways to spend life to draw cards that, you know, it's always more of a premium for them to have that.
Yeah, and again, you know, the looter effects just get so good when you start adding these Madness cards back into the mix that, you know, I would definitely suggest if you're going to add this card, it's not going to be very good if you're not maxing out of them. So just a heads up. Mm-hmm. All right, so next card that we have is probably one of the best creatures in the set. So we have another flip card here. Card's Heir of Falconwrath. And just stat-wise, this is an incredible card. So this is a one in a black, so 2 mana, 2/1, that has the ability discard a card, transform Heir of Falconwrath. And you can only activate that ability once each turn, which is like kind of, I think it's kind of like a way that you don't like get to do multiple Madness or just discard your whole hand, because otherwise it's sort of awkward because you can't flip it back, because when you flip it, it becomes Heir to the Knight. It's a 3/2 flyer. So really, when you think about this, this is a 2-mana 3/2 flyer that, you know, has like very little, or, you know, you don't have to spend a lot of resources to get it to be a 3/2 flyer. And we found out very quickly that having cheap 3/2 flyers is very good if you look at Delver's Secrets. This has all the power of Delver's Secrets with none of the variants. Obviously, like, losing a card is tough. The extra mana is tough. But I think that the stats still hold up.
Yeah, it's almost like discarding a card isn't as bad as it used to be.
Yeah, it's almost like there's a mechanic or two that...
Weird. All right, yeah, I agree. The card's great.
I mean, what more can you say? It beats in for 3 flying.
Literally nothing. That's great. I'm going to lose to it a bunch, and I'm not going to be happy about it.
There you go.
So next card we've got, Indulgent Aristocrat. Nothing super special here, but it's, you know, kind of an enabler. 1 black for 1/1 lifelink vampire. Pay 2, sacrifice a creature, put a +1/+1 counter on each vampire you control. If you're really pushing the Aristocrats type deck, I mean, it even has Aristocrat in the name, so they know what they're doing over. You know, these idiots will play anything that has Aristocrat and just sacrifice on it. It's all thematic, so not an especially great card. The fact that you have to pay mana is kind of you know, it's going to make it a lot worse than what I consider the best sacrifice outlets. It is 1 mana, and it does help you. You know, it gets it on board faster, but overall, you know, I think you're not going to want this.
No, probably not. I mean, we've seen Wizards has tried to push vampire aggro in the Magic Online cube, which really didn't work, but I think there's a few cards in here that definitely make it a much more compelling argument, mostly because they're totally fine by themselves, right? So we just spoiled one, or we just talked about one a minute ago. A Silent Visitor is, that's a vampire. So a lot of the red cards that we'll talk about are vampires. There are definitely cards that are on the fringe that are vampires that, you know, it might not seem like so much of a joke now, mostly because they're fine on their own. Unlike, you know, just having a, you know, like Goblins is kind of a tough one to push because, you know, Goblin Matron does nothing by itself, right? If you have enough Goblin Sharpshooters and Mog Fanatics and those kinds of cards, that eventually you're like, okay, yeah, the occasional like one or two cards in my deck that are dead is fine. And I think you're seeing that with this set. So interesting thought to add that back in. So, next one is Mindrak Demon. So it's 2 in black for 4/5 flying trample. So pretty crazy stats. And it has the ability when Mindrak Demon enters the battlefield, puts top 4 cards of your library into your graveyard. And then it has Delirium. At the beginning of your upkeep, you lose 4 life unless there are 4 more card types among cards in your graveyard. So it's kind of just like, hey, you want to invest 4 mana for this thing with crazy stats, we're going to make you pay the price. So I would say, unless you're supporting graveyard strategies, this one's a no-go. But if you're really pushing graveyard, I'd say this is about as aggressive as you could get outside of Abyssal Persecutor.
There's been a fair number of six or four mana 6/6 flyers. I mean, not a ton, but they all have pretty significant drawbacks compared to this. So it's a little bit more towing the line of you don't pay as much, but you don't get as much. But yeah. It's still, you know, 4/5 trample, nothing to sneeze at. So I'd say it's still pretty good.
Yeah.
So next one, in the same vein of flyers, for 2 mana, 2/1 flyer, we have Oblivious Bloodsworn. One in a black, vampire soldier flying, can't block, and pay red, target vampire gains haste until end of turn.
Yeah.
So it's basically like Vampire Interloper, certainly a very solid card, with the added bonus of being able to pay red to give vampire haste. Not totally flavored text, not totally relevant, but, you know, it's kind of a free upside, so.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's positioning us to be able to support that. And if they do that more with elves and they do that more with goblins, I think you'll start to see those pop up. Certainly zombies, I think, you know, we have a few zombies in this set that do that. So yeah, not worth writing home about. Another one that's like kind of interesting that we've seen before is Pale Rider of Trostad. And this one's a little bit different than its past brethren. So it's a 2-mana 3/3 with Skulk.
Are you saying past brethren because you can't remember their names?
when Pale Rider of Trostad enters the battlefield, discard a card. And so this one, we kind of like our Q group looked at initially, like, you know, do we really want to play this? You know, we've had the other 2-mana 3/3s, you know, forever, and we haven't played them. But actually, the Skulk comes up quite a bit with this, where you know you just like can't kill it with. You know, bigger creatures, and the fact that you can discard any card and not just creature cards was good. So I think the stats all around for this card are good, and we've been fairly pleased with it.
Yeah, seems decent enough. I mean, you typically see Skulk on the smaller guys, so it's kind of strange to see it on a 3/3.
Yeah.
But, you know, realistically, this thing isn't really trading, or it's not getting eaten by most things. You know, you have to have like a 3/4 or like a 3, you know, something bigger, which I can't really think of that many other than Tarmogoyf at a very specific power and toughness.
Yeah, or like Restoration Angel was the first one that popped in my head, but...
Oh, yeah. Yep, this card sucks. Never mind. No, it seems fine. So moving on. So you just mentioned zombies. We haven't seen too many of those. We've seen some vampires, but we have kind of the creme de la creme of zombie here. Uh-huh. And this guy is super fun, super flavorful. We got Relentless Dead. Black for 2/2. This is Menace, so creature can't be blocked except by 2 or more creatures. When Relentless Dead dies, you may pay 1 black. If you do, return it to its owner's hand. When Relentless Dead dies, you may pay X. If you do, return another target zombie creature card with converted mana cost X from your graveyard to the battlefield. So, at the very least, if you have no other zombies, it is a 2-mana 2/2 that you can constantly recur with Menace, which is, again, not to be overlooked. And then when you start adding more zombies, which, you know, we'll probably have a couple here and there, it's just a recur. It's an engine that recurs not only itself but your other zombies. Yeah. And it's all very aggressively costed. The only downside, I think, is that you have to have a pretty heavy commitment to black. But right. Otherwise, you know, this thing is firing on all cylinders. It's attacking. It's providing value from itself. It's providing value from other cards in your graveyard. Very difficult to deal with.
Yeah. I don't really have much else to say about that one. I think it's a pretty solid card, and I don't like the casting cost on it as much. Pretty heavy black investment, but I think it's good. We get more cards like that, we'll see Zombie Tribal come to the top.
There we go.
All right. Next card that we have is our last black card, and this card is To the Slaughter. So this is, you know, not much to say about this other than I think it's fairly solid. Is 2 in a black, instant, target player sacrifices a creature or a planeswalker. So just bear in mind, they get to decide which one they do. Is that correct statement?
Yes.
Okay. And then it has Delirium. If there are 4 more card types among cards in your graveyard, instead that player sacrifices a creature and a planeswalker, which you know, it 90% of the time you think early game they're gonna sack a creature, and then in late game if they for some reason have a planeswalker and a creature out, it's pretty solid and pretty realistic chance of getting that. So I'd say this is there's a lot of edict type effects. I'd say this is one of the more interesting ones. So certainly worth a look.
Yeah, it's tough to get exactly what you want out of it. You know, if they have exactly one creature and exactly one planeswalker and you happen to have Delirium, then yeah, you're going to feel like a freaking genius. In general, there's a lot of competition with this spot, this style of effect. But I agree with you, you know, in the vein of playing things that are more interesting, it's cool. Plus, the art is super nice. It reminds me of the original Jurassic Park when they had the little lamb, you know, that's posted up and then they flash and then, you know, it's just gone.
Yeah.
That thing scared me as a child. Anyways, so that concludes our black section. So we're moving on to red. First card is Avacyn's Judgment. So this is one and a red for a sorcery. Again, we're going to get a madness cost of X and red. So the same cycle of cards of, you know, casting costs and then an X-related madness cost. Avacyn's Judgment deals 2 damage divided as you choose among any number of target creatures and or players. If you pay the madness costs, you can instead deal X. So this acts as kind of like a arc trail slash chain, not chain lightning, fork bolt, that you have the upside of, you know, it costs a little bit more mana, it doesn't deal as much as arc trail, but with madness, you get to turn it into a veritable fireball that you can basically treat as a rolling thunder, which is pretty nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say, this is a fairly flexible card. We've seen it in a few drafts, and I've definitely seen it madness out more than I thought it would be. You know, it's not as powerful as Arc Trail, but I'd say it's got a lot of the same situations that Arc Trail would be good, and certainly a respectable addition.
Yeah, I would really like it to be an instant, so the front side could just be fire, because, you know, I play fire just to be fire, as in fire ice, often enough, but, you know, this card seems fine.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. All right, what do we got next on the list?
So we got Falcon Wrath Gorger. So we got our 1 red, 2/1, Vampire Berserker. Each vampire creature you control, that you own, that isn't on the battlefield, has madness. The madness cost is equal to its mana cost. So basically, it's your generic 2/1 for 1 that lets you madness things out, assuming they're vampires. So great if you're pushing a vampire theme, you know, at the very least, again, 2 power for 1, nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, this just kind of gets back to our discussion before. If, you know, if vampire tribal is going to be a real thing, you need to see more cards that are just like, yeah, you know what, I would totally play that 100% without vampires on my deck. And I think this is like the perfect example. And it's also kind of a, you know, we should play like a sad song or taps or something for Jackal Pup and, you know, some of the other cards that this might displace that, you know, we see enough of these. We saw Savannah Lions get pushed out a year or two ago.
Yeah, I was going to say it's going the same way as Savannah Lions. It's going out to the greener pastures.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't think that the madness part of this is ever going to come up, but it could because there's enough random vampires in, and when it does come up, I know it's going to piss me off.
Yeah.
<you're laughs> like, really? Really? All right.
You're even playing it for the madness part. You just want a 2/1.
Yeah, exactly. No one likes losing to flavor text.
Absolutely not.
All right. Next card is not particularly good, but I think the ability is something that's worth talking about. The second ability. So this card is Geist Blast. It's 2 to red for an instant. Deals 2 damage to target creature player, so nothing too exciting there. But it has this really interesting kind of like flashback mechanic that we have seen a little bit in the blue cards that we didn't really talk about. Is 2 in a blue, and you can exile it from your graveyard to copy target instant or sorcery spell you control. You know, obviously, if it was just like straight up fork, I think that this would be something that you could definitely would definitely see play. But I just think it's really cool that you can fork your own spell and it just goes on the stack. Like, there's no, It's just an activated ability. This is not like, casting it with flashback, which you could counterspell or interact a little bit differently with. So I think this is a really cool idea, and I hope that we see more of this in lieu of maybe even just having flashback cards, which I think in this set they're like, oh, how can we do flashback without flashback? Oh, yeah, we'll just,
Yeah, and we'll get to this card a little bit later in green, but the card Tireless Tracker basically just has landfall, but they don't actually it doesn't have landfall printed on it because it's not in that set.
Yeah, exactly.
Mechanics like landfall and flashback are great. They're fun. They encourage, they give a new dimension to the game. Makes it so. If you're mana flooded, it gives you something to do. So these types of mechanics are. We see them often enough, even if they're not keyworded. So this is, essentially like flashback, but it's different. The fact that it's a different spell, I agree, is kind of a cool thing. I'd like to see more in that design space.
Yeah. Hey, I just want to make one comment real quick, because there's two cards that we're not going to talk about. Kessick Forge Master and Gibbering Fiend. I just, am so sick of Wizards making these two ones that are, really, really close to being good enough. Or even, in many cases, they are good enough. They're just, so boring. So we're just not going to talk about them. They don't get our attention. So
they don't deserve that.
So let's talk about something, way more interesting.
All right. How about something that doubles the amount of damage that you get dealt?
Oh, that sounds awful.
It does. So let's talk about it. So there's a card called Gold Knight Castigator. It's 2 red-red. For a flying haste 4/9, that's a big butt.
It's the stupidest.
But wait, there's more. If a source would deal damage to you, it deals double that damage to you instead. If a source would deal damage to Golden Knight Castigator, it deals double that damage to Golden Knight Castigator instead. So it doubles the damage it's dealt to you, doubles the damage it's dealt to itself. But it does have 9 toughness, so I don't know. Seems decent. Plus, it's in red. It's a 4-power flying haste creature for 4 mana. That's definitely nothing to sneeze at. I think the downside has got to be worth it here. I mean, how often do you... I mean, obviously, you care about taking double damage, but if you're playing this card, you're the aggressor.
Yeah, so I initially thought that I really liked this card, but then in practice, it just totally killed me. The two obvious cards that come to my mind, well, I guess there's a few cards here, but I think of the Thundermaw Hellkite and Stormbreath Dragon as really over the top finishers for red that have some protection built in. This thing's protected because you're not going to be able to realistically lightning bolt this off. You have to throw a few removal spells at it.
Toxic Deluge for 9.
But, at the end of the day, do I think that, if you have a cube that is able to support aggro decks, do I think I want to run this card? I don't think so. If it's a slower cube, I think I would get into this because this card just kills Planeswalkers. You can't realistically deal with this with a lot of things that kill other stuff. But I just think it's too big of a liability. But, again, it's a red mythic. It's close, but I'd say no cigar.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting enough, but there's definitely a lot of competition at the 4-drop slot. They've printed enough other 4-power flying creatures at 4, or in red. So between Avaricious Dragon and Thunderbreak Regent.
Or even just the 6 Phoenixes that are sitting in my on-deck binder.
Sure, yeah. Give Phoenixes a chance before you add another Angel to your cube.
We're really close to Phoenix Tribal.
Yeah, I don't hold your breath.
Well, all right, let's talk about a red card that is a little more powerful.
Okay.
Oh, there's none. Okay, let's go. No, okay. All right, let's talk about Sin Prodder. Sin Prodder is it's so hard to evaluate this card. A lot of people saw it and they're like, it's garbage. And then some people saw it and said, it's more like a Punisher mechanic than anything. So it's, automatically not going to be good. So let's read this card. So this is 2 and a red for a 3/2 with menace. So decent stats, can't be blocked except by 2 creatures. So, when you think of red being able to force damage in the early game, I think this can do that. Then it has the ability, at the beginning of your upkeep, reveal the top card of your library. any opponent may have you put that card into your graveyard. If that player does, it deals damage to that player equal to that card's converted mana cost. Otherwise, put it into your hand. So let's think about this. If we reveal a land 100% of the time, the land's going in the yard, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're not going to want you to put it in your hand. So this basically is getting no value unless you're hitting non-land cards. So
The value is that you're not drawing that land.
That's true. That is true. But the real key here is if you reveal cards that are like super aggressive, if you reveal your Keldon Champions or your Koths or even like equipment or, you know, 2 and 3 mana burn spells, it just, your opponent is like, well, what am I going to do? I guess I'm just going to let you have this card because otherwise I'm just going to get burned anyway.
Free.
Yeah. Like I'll just make you spend the mana. So like you flip Incinerate off of this. You're like, oh my God, are you kidding? So I this card has been really solid in practice. I've been very impressed with it.
That's yeah. I was kind of in the firmly not good camp just because it's a Punisher mechanic. Also, not to prod too much fun at Evan Irwin, but I heard that you know anytime he thinks a card's really good, it's almost guaranteed not to be. And he was really high on this card. So I thought you know what you know anything that looks this way, you know, it has this, oh, you get to draw a bunch of cards, but, you know, only if your opponent lets you. Again, typically a trap, but
yeah.
I see the merits. And it's like you said, even if they don't let you draw the card, you know, you're either dealing them damage, or if it's land, like I said, you're not drawing those lands, which is probably not what you want if you're playing this in your deck. So it seems decent enough. I can definitely get behind it.
Nice. All right, so we really have one more red card because we already talked about Village Messenger.
Yeah, we don't need to harp on that one. So there's another one, Skin Invasion. This is one red for enchantment. Enchanted creature attacks each combat if able. When enchanted creature dies, return Skin Invasion to the battlefield transformed under your control. And the flip side is a 3/4 insect horror, so it doesn't get bounced by your Awoken Horror, if that's relevant to you at all. I kind of really like this card. I think it's very interesting. It's not like Delver of Secrets good, but you know if you're playing red, you know it's interesting because you can put it on your own creatures, you can put it on your one drop, and you know say hey either you have to answer this or and if you do I'm going to get a 3/4 or I just you know sticks around, or you put it on your opponent's creature. And if you're playing red, you know this is probably the more common approach. They play something, let's say they play a thing in the ice. They play a blocker, a spellscape, whatever. You make an attack each turn. So it's already being removed. It's already you know being negated in what it's supposed to be doing.
Thing in the ice says defender, but I agree with you.
Okay, spellscape.
Spellscape, yeah.
You know, that, again, could be corner case, but the fact that you you're playing red, so you're probably playing burn. You can just say Skin Invasion, your guy, lightning bolt it. I get a 3/4, pretty good value, you know, for 2 mana or 1 mana in this case.
Yeah, you kill their guy dead, and you get a 3/4. That seems fine. Yeah, this card's been very impressive. When I first saw it spoiled, I'm like, hey, yeah, whatever. I don't, you know, like that kind of mechanic's usually just not good. But yeah, it's been surprisingly solid, and it triggers surprisingly often. So.
Yeah.
I also just like it as like the, hey, do you really want to kill my guy? Like, mm-hmm. I need this guy in the battlefield, but like, you know, I'm just going to spend this early mana. I've got extra cards in my hand, whatever. Like, yeah, you want to kill this? And fine, I'm going to get 3/4. So I like it. It's been good. So let's get into the worst color of the set, which is kind of weird because green has been pretty solid lately. And let's talk about green. So we only have about 4 or 5 cards in green that really stood out to us. So the first one is a flip card. So this card's Duskwatch Recruiter. So 1 and a green for a 2/2 with the ability 2 and a green. Look at the top 3 cards of your library. You may reveal a creature card from among them, put it into your hand, and the rest of them at the bottom of your library, any order. And at the beginning of your upkeep, if you know, it has the werewolf text. And then the flip side is it's a 3/3 with creature spells you cast cost 1 less to cast. So it reduces cost. So it's like you burn the mana to find the cards, and then, you know, like you can skip your turn to do this thing, and then you can play them cheaper next time. It's kind of like a wonky design.
I'm firmly in this card is outrageous. I think it's – even if you only have the front side of this thing, it's, you know, a 2-mana 2-2 is not amazing, but, you know, if you have the mana lying around to basically anticipate for a creature, then it's repeatable, it's instant speed.
Oh, it's instant speed. Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. So you can spend the mana, like...
I was reading this as sorcery speed this whole time.
Yeah, and, you know, honestly, most cards like this, I mean, look at every blue card that, you know, that you have to spend mana to draw a card, just about, you know, the Duskmantle mage guy, guild mage, you know, maybe not every single one, but most of them are pay 4 mana, draw a card at sorcery speed.
Yeah, yeah.
This, pay 3 mana, you can filter what you're looking at, what you're drawing, and it's at instant speed, and it has a flip side. So we're only talking about the front side, and the back side, you know, it makes all the things that you just got that much cheaper.
Yeah. I don't like the back side as much, but no, now that you kind of read it that way, I can get behind that a little bit more when you have, it's just a nice mana sink. A little expensive, but the fact that you can do it multiple times is nice. So, okay. I can see that. I'm not, like, you know, clamoring to get it in, but no, that's an important distinction. So, another card that's blazing up the Pro Tour right now is Seasons Past, which is...
Yeah. So this is, pretty, I don't know, I guess it's pretty powerful. I mean, it says four green for sorcery. Return any number of cards with different converted mana costs from your graveyard to your hand. Put Seasons Pass on the bottom of its owner's library. Definitely, you know, requires a bit of deck construction to make this thing work, but, you know, it's a pretty powerful regrowth. And in a pretty surprising twist, I mean, most regrowths that we see, the what I think is the more potent part of this card is the fact that it doesn't exile itself. That's what most regrowths do nowadays. And this, in fact, not only doesn't do that, but it also puts it on the bottom of your library, so you get to keep going.
Yeah, this card is a powerful card. You know, in getting, like, that's why, like, restock was so good, is you could get your strip mine plus a counterspell back, and you know, sometimes all Sun's Dawn just kind of feels a little flat when you just have, like, a green blue deck. You're like, okay, well, you know, I can get my counterspell and, like, this bird back because that's all I have access to. But if you have a full graveyard, you could realistically get 3 or 4 cards with this without breaking a sweat. I mean, it's pretty, and you know, God forbid you cast this on, like, turn 15 where you just have, like, a game that's long. You just won the game. It's like a Praetor's Count or Praetor's Council that costs 6 mana.
Oh, you did it.
I did it. Yes. So yeah, I love this card. I think it's a great card. Definitely better than restock. Certainly better than All Sun's Dawn. So, I'm totally fine to pay the extra mana. Though I don't play restock in All Sun's Dawn because they're cheap.
Right. Yeah.
I play them because they're big abilities, you know. So
I mean, Nick, that's why.
All right. Next card is pretty. You had kind of talked about this one earlier. The card with landfall on it that doesn't actually have the words landfall. Tireless Tracker. So it's our last clue card. 2 and a green for a 3/2 that has the ability, when a land enters the battlefield under your control, investigate. And so you could potentially investigate every turn if you hit your land drop. But it also has the ability, when you sacrifice a clue, put a +1/+1 counter on it. And this is just, like, great upside for green decks, being able to play this early and just, you know, you can get it off of Kodama's Reach or, you know, other ramp that you have. If you have a fetch land, it gets 2. Like, it just starts to get crazy. And, you know, this isn't even, like, best case scenario syndrome. Like, I've seen it happen. Like, we're just that, you know, my opponent, his only card that he had was, like, this and a couple lands, and just, like, in a few turns, he's got 7 cards in his hand. Like, it just gets out of control pretty fast.
Yeah. And it's not like you're going to be running that many clue enablers, you know, because this is one set out of many when you're cubing, but just by itself, it's very powerful.
Yeah. You know,
it's, you know, it's yet to be seen how much mana you... There's so many mana sinks, like, especially in this set. I mean, the last card we looked at, or the, you know, Dustwatch Recruiter. I mean, that's the value of cards like that, is they come down early, they put a pressure on your opponent, and then they still, you know, when you have mana lying around, you can typically cast them in for some cards. So
yeah,
it's a new age for Magic where green gets to have a lot of this card advantage and card selection, even in Oath of Nissa and Dustwatch Recruiter, and it's pretty cool.
You know, I think that's why you're seeing less mana elves, because green is getting so good at drawing cards. The last thing you want to do is give them all the mana too. So I think you're seeing them shy away. In fact, in this set, we only have one. Well, we have two cards that make mana. One of them requires tapping another creature, and then the other one's a two drop. So right.
Yeah, I think we're long past the days of one mana dorks, and even in two mana rampant growths.
Yeah, no, I think you're right there. So hit us with our last green card here.
So we've got Uvenwald Hydra. Mm. This is four green for a reach with his power and toughness equal to the number of lands you control. When Uvenwald Hydra enters the battlefield, you may search your library for a land card, put it on the battlefield tap, and shuffle your library. So kind of like Primeval Titan Light, yeah. And as far as searching of lands, obviously it gets a little bit bigger than Primeval Titan. You get to search for one land, and again, it doesn't specify that it has to be basic, so you get to get your,
Guy's Cradle, Strip Mine.
Thank you. Yeah, I was going to say the X Trample.
Kessick Wulfrun.
Yeah, Kessick Wulfrun, thank you.
You did.
So, yeah, you get whatever, you know, cards, you know, Westvale Abbey, when we get to that card. It's a nice addition. It's certainly not going to be competing with Primeval Titan for that spot, but if you want more of the same but slightly different, I mean, the upside is that this guy gets more, you know, he gets bigger than Primeval Titan, and if you're running Kessick Wulfrun, the trample part is going to be kind of included with that anyway, so
yeah.
It's a nice addition.
Yeah, I guess I'll just say, like, let's be honest, the Titans were poor designs. They provide way more value than they need to, and what it does is it makes, like, otherwise great six drops look weak. Mm-hmm. So to me, this is a very solid six drop, and so, you know, like, we just can't compare every card that does what Primeval Titan does to Primeval Titan, because it's just the same way we can't compare every Planeswalker to Jace and every draw spell to Ancestral. Like, the Titans are probably about as good as you're going to get in six drops, at least the black and the green Titans. And, you know, red, I think we probably can see a card that does more than Inferno Titan, but they're just poor design choices. Maybe if we didn't get them all at once, or maybe if their mana costs or abilities were a little different, it'd be different. I mean, I would even play Primeval Titan if it just got the one land, right? Which is why I would play this, but whatever.
Yeah. So I you're right.
So, all right, let's talk about some gold. We got some solid gold cards here. We got a clone we're not going to talk about. I mean, whatever. It's a clone, Altered Ego. Four mana, can't get bigger. I'm not going to talk about it. Let's go to some of the more interesting cards here. So we have a super solid kind of like not a Vindicate, but, you know, shoot, Jack. We're bad here. Utter End. Thank you. Oh my gosh. Took my stupid juice this morning. All right. Anguished Unmaking. One white and a black. Instant. Exile target on land permanent. You lose three life. Pretty straightforward card there. Kill a planeswalker end of turn. Kill your creature. Kill your equipment. I like this card at three mana.
Kill your Guild Lotus.
Yeah, like, what the heck would you not like about this card? It's a singleton format. You don't have to run this card in multiples. I think three life is a fine price to pay for reducing this card by one mana. This is an end for me.
If you compare it to, like, Phyrexian mana, which obviously was a mistake.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at, Utter End was, you know, one of those mana was Phyrexian mana, you'd probably almost always pay three, and, you know, unless you just happen to have four. I mean, it would be more common to pay it with three mana and two life. And so, you know, the extra life, a little bit more reasonable. They know that, you know, if you're going to reduce the cost of something, you need to cost it more than that. So three life, a little bit significant, but definitely, definitely a worthy addition. So
yeah,
not much more else to say. Something a little bit more interesting is the Gitzrog monster.
Oh yeah, I take it back. This is my favorite card in the set.
Yeah, this is a big fan favorite. I think a lot of people like it just because it's a legendary frog, but I mean, the stats and just the effect is so cool. So it's 3 black green for a 6/6. So this is Spiritmonger stats. I'm a big fan of harkening back to good old Spiritmonger.
Yeah.
Got Death Touch. At the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice the Gitrog monster unless you sacrifice a land. You may play an additional land on each of your turns. Whenever one or more lands are put into your graveyard from anywhere, draw a card.
Yeah.
This card is so cool. So, you know, it tricks you into thinking, oh, I have to sacrifice lands, or this guy, this thing is, you know, I thought creatures are better than that these days. And then you keep reading, and you're like, oh, okay, I'm cool with that. I'll sacrifice some lands. You know what? I'll sacrifice lands to this, and I'll strip mine you, and I'll draw cards for it.
Yeah, it's... So I've seen mixed reviews for this, which totally surprises me. I think...
That blows my mind.
It's such an interesting card, first of all, that people that dismiss it outright without playing it, it just is... It's just stupid, okay? this is a card that, much like Planeswalkers, is multidimensional, and you can't just evaluate it for what it is on the card. So let's think of some ways that you can utilize this card. Like, obviously, like anything that involves dumping cards at the bin, any dredge mechanic, anything like Bizarre Baghdad will trigger this. You can trigger that once a turn. That's pretty nice. Fetch lands, you know, having the ability to recycle lands is awesome. If you happen to have this plus something that, like a Future Sight or Oracle Moldiah, where like you can put multiple lands into play. That's always going to be good. Like, it's got a lot of situations where you can take advantage of the upside. Oh, and by the way, if you can't, it's still a 6/6 for 5 mana.
Yeah, that's not bad. I mean, it's not like we have to get value out of it. It's just, there's a lot of easy ways to do it. And if you don't, no big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, and it feeds itself. I mean, eventually, you're going to want to turn your lands into just drawing cards anyways, and if you draw more lands, well, this guy lets you play to a turn anyways, so...
Exactly, so you offset the tempo loss. It's not really tempo loss. You offset the fact that you're losing mana by playing two. So, like, if you play this card and you have 3 lands in your hand, like, you're still going to hit your land drops for at least a couple turns, right? So you're going to lose the card, you're going to gain a card, but you get to play 2 lands. So design-wise, like it's supposed to do, it's supposed to just be this big guy that like says, hey, you know, if you have Faithless Lootings and other ways to like discard lands or sacrifice lands, like, yeah, go for it. You just draw your old deck if you want.
Yeah, no worries. Life from the loam, you get to mill your lands, draw cards, you get to get your lands back, play them faster with this guy.
Yep.
Everyone's crazy if they don't like it.
Stupid. All right, let's talk about our last Planeswalker. Oh, no, second Planeswalker. It just seems like our last Planeswalker.
Nahiri, a lot of Planeswalkers.
Yes, there's 3 or 4 in this set or something.
Yeah.
Jace, Nahiri, Soren.
Arlen,
yeah, okay. So, oh, God, did we skip over Arlen? We did because it's a flip card, but let's go out of order. So Nahiri the Harbinger is 2 red-white, so it's got a Johnny Vengeant casting cost, and it's a 4 loyalty. So she has +2, you may discard a card if you do draw a card, so very nice looting ability. -2, exile target enchantment, tapped artifact, or tapped creature, and then -8, search your library for an artifact or creature, put it on the battlefield, shuffle your library, it gains haste, and then return it to your hand. Yeah, this Planeswalker is stupid good. You know,
I
like
this card a lot.
Yeah, I don't really have any like defensible reason why you would run this over anything, or why any card that isn't a Johnny Vengeant would be run over this card, including Lightning Helix, including all the other cards. And if you have problems finding room for it because your hybrid is there and like Figure of Destiny is taking up a slot, just move Figure of Destiny somewhere else. This card is good, and you should not cut it because of your color constraints.
Hmm. So, you've experienced this then.
It's freaking great. It is the loot is good. The minus has been amazing. I have not ultimated it, but I have just been like +2, -2, +2, -2, and it's just been absurd.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in +2 on a 4-mana Planeswalker, we've seen that before. It's been pretty good. It makes it hard to deal with. I mean, that's a form of protection.
Yep.
On top of -2, dealing anything with dealing with anything that attacks it. So it's kind of like, you know, the original Gideon, where you plus two, and, you know, Gideon makes them attack it, but, you know, typically if your opponent has a planeswalker out, you're going to attack it anyways, and then, great, you know, this thing has six loyalty, they're going to knock it down a couple pegs, and then you get to ding the biggest thing they have, or just keep plussing if you have other ways to deal with it. And it's not quite draw a card, but especially when we're talking about all these madness cards, flashback cards, cards that, you know, they want to go into your graveyard, it's about as close as you can get on a 4-mana planeswalker.
Yeah.
It's still plus two, so card seems great. I'm happy with it.
Yeah, I'm totally with you there. So we got another 4-mana planeswalker. What do we got?
Yeah, so we got Arlan Cord. This is another flip card. 2 red-green. So Huntsmaster mana cost. It's got 2 abilities on the front side. It's plus one. So it starts with 3 loyalty. Plus 1. Until end of turn, up to 1 target creature gets +2/+2 and gains vigilance and haste. Or 0, put a 2/2 green wolf creature token on the battlefield to transform Arlan Cord. So on the flip side, we've got Arlan Embraced by the Moon. It's got 3 abilities here. +1, creatures you control get +1/+1 and gain trample until end of turn. -1, Arlan Embraced by the Moon deals 3 damage to a creature or player, transform Arlan Embraced by the Moon. And the ultimate is -6. You get an emblem with creatures you control have haste and tap. This creature deals damage equal to its power to target creature or player. There's a lot of lines of text on this card.
That's probably the most text that any planeswalker has. So that's kind of cool.
Well, the Garrick Relentless, he's got a comparable amount. I mean, I guess it's about the same amount.
This just feels like it has more, you know, she has more usable abilities than any of the other planeswalkers. Like, have you played this yet? This card is, like, just absurd.
I haven't, no. I've drawn, like, in my mind the decision tree of, okay, when this is out, I can 0, I make it wolf, it flips it over, and then you have this and this, and there's just so many ways you can take this thing.
Yeah.
It's absurd. And you know, what it's doing at a, you know, kind of at a surface level is very powerful. I mean, the fact, you know, it's been kind of decided, I think, just by Wizards that, you know, they've kind of settled into how planeswalkers should be costed, what they should be doing. I mean, that's why when we see Jace, Unraveler of Secrets, we're kind of grown because, oh, well, it does the same thing. It's not exciting. And while that's true, you know, I think it's because they know, you know, approximately what these cards should be doing for the cost that you're paying for them.
Yeah.
And Arlan Cord, you know, for 4 mana, if you're making 2/2s, it should be a 0 ability. Look at Xenagos, look at Gideon Ally of Zendikar,
yep.
Look at Garrick Relentless. So that's a pretty standard ability. But, you know, now instead of just being able to make it 2/2 every turn, you can't do that because it's going to flip.
Yeah.
And so now you have to choose, are you going to pump your guys? Are you going to minus it to lightning bolt something and then transform it back? It doesn't allow you to do the same repetitive effect every turn, which is, for better or worse, a different card, which is cool. You know, obviously.
No, I think that's what makes it so interesting. Like, there's choices that you have to make. It's like, okay, I really want to flip it back because I really want one part of the ability, or I really need to get the lightning bolt out of this, even though I want to give this guy haste. It's decisions. It makes the game more complex. I think it makes Magic more rewarding when you get to win off of a complex line of decisions. And Arlan is about as complex as a planeswalker as I think we've seen in a while.
Yeah.
It's not complex in that, like, the games that I've won with it, I've just had, like, reasonable creatures. Like, you know, a Thragtusk died, and I got a 3-3, and then I had, like, a couple other small creatures, and then I just did the +1/+1 trample, and I just kill my opponent to, like, -10, just because the trample was so good. But, yeah, I think it's just the same way in Nahiri. There's a lot of red-green cards that are good enough, you should just cut them and make room for it. I think it makes Magic more interesting. Obviously, like, you don't want to just max out on planeswalkers. That's no fun. So you're going to have to find a balance. If you add 2 planeswalkers, you probably want to cut 1 or 2 planeswalkers, but I think it'd be worth it to cut a Gideon to make room for Nahiri or a Chandra to make room for Nahiri. So
it does annoy me a little bit, but that this is the third red-green planeswalker they've made.
Yeah, like, there's definitely color combinations that we could use more of.
Spread the love out a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But definitely, I think the color combination that was in the most need of love was probably red white. So glad yeah. I'm glad we got that, and maybe even black white to a certain extent. And we obviously, you know, have gotten quite a bit of love in this set for there.
Yeah.
You know, with that in mind, what is our last Planeswalker?
Yeah, so this is a pretty solid Planeswalker. Sorin, Grim Nemesis. So it's 4 white-black, 6 mana for a 6 loyalty Planeswalker. And it harkens back. It does feel a lot like the original Sorin and the abilities that it has. So it has +1, reveal the top card of your library and put that card into your hand. Each opponent loses life equal to its converted mana cost. So, like, this is a very, very serious ability if you have anything, like, even if you're just flipping over a Wrath of God, you know, your opponent losing 4 and you gaining a card is pretty awesome. Then it has -X, Sorin, Grim Nemesis deals X damage to target creature, Planeswalker, and you gain X life. And then -9, put a number of 1/1 black vampire knight creature tokens with lifelink onto the battlefield, equal the highest life total. I think we found that, like, ultimates that make creatures are not typically that great because you just answer them so easily. But the first two abilities are really solid. So he's a Planeswalker killer, and the card advantage that he provides kills your opponent. So
I think the most common line of play is play this guy, kill your biggest threat, and then just, you know, have this Phyrexian Arena plus, you know, hoping your opponent can't deal with it. Which, you know, you give yourself a life buffer, you take out their biggest threat, so hopefully, you know, your board can kind of keep them at bay, and then if you get to +1 this guy even once, the game is, you know, it's pretty far ahead for you. And then the longer this thing stays out, obviously, that's just going to end the game alone.
Yeah,
I was a little bit skeptical at first because 6 mana, it doesn't do as good of a job protecting itself as, you know, Elspeth, but I think that this thing has a very real competitive spot for 6 drops. You know, even compared to Elspeth.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Now, I think it's a solid Planeswalker. I think the problem is, you know, there's a lot of white-black cards now. Especially, we just got Anguish of Making, and, you know, we have several other Sorins and, you know, Vindicate. And so I think there's a lot of ways that could keep this out, as opposed to, I think, Arlen and Nahiri. I would be more inclined to want to include them. So I'd say you probably would want to lose the latest Sorin and include this one. You know, Solemn Visitor probably isn't as powerful as Grim Nemesis as far as, like, board presence, but, like, if you just really want 4-drop Planeswalkers, then, you know, it's different. Like, I play this in Control, I play the other one in Aggro, right? Pumps all your dudes, makes vampires. So
yeah,
lots of stuff to consider.
Also, from what I honestly don't remember the biggest, like, the differences between the last two Sorins, because they were both 2 white-black, and they did basically the same thing, just kind of in reverse order.
It's like
one made 1/1 vampires, one made 2/2 vampires, but you had to minus it.
Yeah.
It was just, I don't know, it seemed uninspired. But
this anyways. Is, yeah, no, you're totally right. So that's a great argument for why you would, if you're going to include 2 Sorins, like, this should be one of them, right? Because at least this one can slot into a different kind of deck. Yeah. Whereas the other ones, I think, like, I think the first Sorin is probably, like, the most flexible. And then this one's the Control one, and Solemn Visitor is the aggro one.
By first one, you don't mean the black 3 one, right? You don't mean Sorin Markov.
No, not Sorin Markov. Though I don't think these would compete for the same slot.
No. Okay.
But yeah, I wouldn't run all 4 Sorins. That's kind of overkill. Oh, no. All right, so last gold card on the list. We got
Olivia Mobilized for War. So we're out of Planeswalkers. We're back into just daggone creatures. This is 1 black-red for 3/3 flyer. Whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, you may discard a card. If you do, put a +1/+1 counter on that creature. It gains haste until the turn, and it becomes a vampire in addition to its other types. And this is a vampire knight, which I'm a big fan of because of Hokan's Stronghold Surge. It's a very big pet card of mine, and you know, who doesn't want to play more knights?
Agreed. Yeah.
Solid, flexible card. Great at enabling madness, great at enabling any other graveyard shenanigans.
Super awesome stats.
Better for zombies. Yeah, definitely great. You know, 3/3 flying for 3. Very, very strong just as a baseline. That's mostly it. I mean, obviously, zombies are more inclined to want to be in your graveyard, or, you know, you want things that discard things for zombies, but they're starting to kind of bleed that over into vampires a little bit, as we've seen with the, you know, the Falcon Wrath Gorger, the red one drop that we talked about.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so overall, just solid card. You know, at worst, this has been 3 flyer, and at best, you get to pump your team and get value out of madness cards.
Yeah, so we get another set, right? So this is our big set. So we have more opportunities to see more vampires. So
yeah.
I think I'd be very surprised if we didn't kind of like see the entire black-red vampire thing coalesce in the next set to a point where you probably could support it pretty easily. But yeah. I'll happily eat my words that Vampire Tribal is good enough when you add, you know, like 10 vampires that are over the top crazy good.
Right.
I have no complaints there. Like, yeah, go ahead, support it. Okay, so we have two cards to talk about. I guess I didn't say, excuse me, I love this card. I think the stats are awesome, and I think it's very flexible, and I think it does cool things. So what more could you want, right? Let's talk about, let's do quickly the land cycle. We'll end on like the coolest card in the set. So there's a dual land cycle. Not particularly exciting, but like if you had a really large cube and you're just like scraping the barrel trying to find land cycles, like heck yeah, these are totally fine. You know, it's the cycle is they enter the battlefield tapped, they're allied dual lands that don't have a land type, and you can reveal a land of either side. So if it's a like Port Town is a white blue tap land, but as Port Town enters the battlefield, you may reveal plains or island, and if you do, it enters the battlefield untap. You know, we have the M10 lands and the fast lands and the man lands, and there's just like so many cycles that I don't think these would even be a consideration. So
yeah, they're another dual cycle. I'm not especially impressed with them, but you know, it's something if you need it.
Yeah.
I want to give a quick shout out to Drowned Temple. You know, we won't talk about it, but it's a cool card. I mean, it's you know, tap, add a colorless your mana pool, or pay 3, return Drowned Temple for your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. And this card is cool. It gives you another effect to use with the graveyard. And I think more importantly, you know, when you do that, it ramps you a little bit. I think that's kind of you know, not super clear to most people when they see this card. Is when you get this in your graveyard and you kind of dredge it back out for 3, you're ramping yourself. And this is a colorless ramp spell. It's typically not going to be in green because the colors that enable putting things in your graveyard are going to be like blue or black or maybe red a little bit. You know, these are colors that, you know, in lieu of having other ways of ramping, I mean, you might be running Signets, you might not be, but you know, it's a card that not only gives you value for it, but ramps you. So that's really cool in my opinion.
Jack, I was playing Modern on Magic Online the other day, and I played against a Hakan deck that had this card.
Oh, were you?
With smallpox, and yeah, it was like super interesting. I obviously steamrolled it because I'm the best, but it was
that's probably bad, but they're gonna play it anyways.
It was really cool. Like they had Urborg, so like, you know, they were tapping for black, but at one point he had reanimated a couple of them.
Yeah. See, I was running you know, back in my day before we had Drowning Your Temples, we had to run Stones of Trochir to smallpox away.
Flagstones, yeah.
God, I'm so close.
It did it. Damn. All right, so let's get into the last card of the set, and I think this is a great card to end on.
Yeah.
Westvale Abbey. What a card. So tap, add one colorless to your mana pool. So this is a land. Not legendary, which is not super important, but it has 5 tap, pay 1 life, put a 1/1 white and black human cleric token onto the battlefield. So kind of a weak, you know, Urza's Factory. But then it has 5 tap, sacrifice 5 creatures, transform Westvale Abbey. So I wonder what this thing – oh, and then you untap it. So I wonder what this would transform into if we have such a thing. Holy smokes. Or Ormendal the Profane Prince, legendary creature demon. It's a 9/7 flying lifelink indestructible haste. Oh, so you're saying if I sacrifice 5 creatures, I should win the game for that.
So. Yeah, I guess so. Oh, well, it's on a land, though. Certainly it couldn't be that good, right?
When you think about, we just got out of the Eldrazi set, So we have a lot of cards that require colorless mana. So if you want to play Reality Smashers and Thought Not Seers, etc., you want to have as many colorless lands as you can. So that's kind of a nice bonus. And then, of course, we love sacrifice decks. It also makes its own tokens to sacrifice, so it's actually kind of a reasonable card if you even in a deck that couldn't commit enough creatures. This card is just all around awesome.
Yeah, it does so much, and it's a land. I mean, I was talking to my buddy yesterday about the Pro Tour, and he said, "Oh yeah, this deck's, you know, these green black collected company decks running this card, and you know, just crushing everything." And I'm like, "Well, yeah, of course, it's a land that turns into a 9/7 lifelink flying indestructible haste creature. Like, what did you expect to happen?"
Oh my god!
The investment is you have to play a colorless land, which is not even an investment nowadays. Like you said, you want to run those cards anyways, the ones that require generic colorless. So it's like, well, I need a land that does this. I guess I'll run this one that, you know, creates the biggest threat possible in the Magic universe.
Yeah, it's
silly.
But it's got a ton of utility too. So, like, you know, cards like Urza's Factory haven't even been in consideration for a very long time. But this, to me, is, you know, being able to flip into this card that, yeah, unless you have a Declaration in Stone or a Bounce spell, like, good luck. Good luck.
Yeah, certain colors definitely kind of get shafted because there's not very good ways to deal with it. Black, red, white and blue, I think, are really the most cleanest ways to answer this. And in green especially, like, in you're not going to be running clip wings in your cube deck, so you know, you better hope that you've got a steady supply of Birds of Paradise to chump block this with. And even then, they're gaining 9 life doing it, so...
Yeah.
It's tough to deal with. It's another fun thing to do with land. So if you're running, you know, Gitrog Monster, and if you're committing to sort of land theme with Life in the Loam, Crucible, you know, not only can you get this threat out, but you can kind of recur it if they ever have a way to deal with it.
Yeah, totally into that.
I mean, I guess the one nice thing is that it transforms instead of makes this token. So, you know, you can't just like make a token, bring the land back, and then sandbag it until you need to do it again.
No, that's true. That's true. It's much more fair and fun than Dark Depths, though. Like, Dark Depths is basically bad, but when it's good, it's, like, unbeatable.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think this is definitely beatable. You know, the clock is a little shorter.
It's pretty atrocious, but it's not 2020 atrocious.
Yeah, yeah. So, overall, I'd say this set has a little bit of something for everybody. There probably, as far as automatic includes, if people really want to go down the it's got to be a staple route, I'd say you probably have at least 10 cards that I would say should make most rare cubes. And then if you want to get really stingy, I'd say there's like 5 cards that are going to make every cube. So I'd say that's a pretty solid thing. And then if you're like me and you really push the mechanics of the set, I think I have maybe 20 cards that are in my cube right now. And of course, we linked to the Cube Tutor link for my cube. You can check it out. If you don't have your cube on there, definitely put it up there. And if you want feedback on your list, Jack and I are on Twitter. I'm at KStube. Jack's at SpelljackG, and the show is at Joy of Cubing. And you can tweet at us anytime. Send us a link to your list with specific questions. We're always happy to provide feedback on your lists or anything, any projects you have going on, any crazy ideas. We promise we won't steal them and write articles about them. You know, it's not our style. This is fun. A lot of fun cards here. Any final thoughts on this set?
Definitely one of the better sets we've seen recently. Obviously, the more you commit to the madness, the graveyard, the better the cards in this set get. But even without that, there's so many playable things, so many flavorful things that, you know, they add a different dimension to what most cube cards, cube decks can, you know, what we have allotted to us so far. And so if we see this continued trend of complex, interesting cards, you know, I think it, you know, managing cubes is just going to get that much harder when, you know, you have 20 legitimately reasonable cards that you want to, you know, put in your on-deck binder to try out, and then you have to cut 20 cards. And, you know, it's hard to sustain when you get this many sets a year.
So. I know, man. It and now every cube is starting to just look so much different. you know, back in the day, it's like you just had like this core list that you would have a choice, a card choice, and you'd say, that's actually incorrect to run that card.
Yeah.
And now it's not fair to say that a card is garbage or a card is not cubable just because there's definitely contextual things that have to be taken into account. And I think if you're running a cube that you can just say this card is good or bad on the surface, then I'd say reevaluate your design. You should have something that's interesting, not something that's just based on like, oh yeah, in a vacuum, this is a 10. In a vacuum, mm-hmm. this is a 0. And it's so cut and dry. And, you know, there's definitely going to be situations that, you know, one Sorin is better than the other, even if one is strictly better in every way, you know, just definitely considerations to make these days. I would be very, you know, think about where we'll be like in 5 years when we've got another 20 sets worth of cards. And even if those 20 sets only offer us 5 cards each, like, oh my gosh, where are we going to be?
Yeah, you can make a cube with the last 5 years worth of cards, and that would be totally fine. It would be, you know, at the same power level, I assume, as all these other cubes. It's just, it's mind-boggling to even think about.
My friend Jeff has a on-deck cube, which is basically every card that I don't run in my cube is allowed to be run. So I think he calls it the Tier 2 cube, and it's a lot of fun. It's just, you know, it's just interesting because you can't run like Wrath of God or Swords to Plowshares because those are in pretty much every cube. They're in the Magic Online cube, so you have to find other ways.
Sure.
Equipment sucks, right? Most of the equipment, of the equipment is pretty bad. Most of the Wraths are bad.
But you get your Savannah Lions, you get your Jackal Pups back.
Yeah, they're back, baby.
That's a All good right. idea.
So thanks for tuning in, guys. We'll have another episode in the month of May. And you know, if you have any show ideas, please submit them to our blog or Twitter or the Reddit thread that we post for each show. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time, we are Joy of Cubing. Thank you.